All right.
Hello.
Hi.
Surprise.
Hey, everybody. We're back because the banking system's about to collapse. Or is it? Today. Yay.
So, yeah, no intro music. It's just like, you know, this is like a cold start, y'all. But we actually, life has been a whole thing for both of us for a while. And so we've kind of, neither of us have had time to really focus on this project. But then with everything that's been happening this week, Hadassah texted me and was like, do you want to just quickly record a reaction and just put it out there? Like stick our heads up above and then
our lives come out. Yeah.
Yeah. So voila, like no post-production at all. We're just, hey, here we are. Ladies yeah. approach.
So hello. Yes, this is a pop-up episode of Bottom Line's Top Dollars. We are the Ladies Who Crunch. I'm Hadassah Damian and...
I'm Laura Boo. I'm recording from Charlottetown PEI, which is on the island of Ibequit, which is unceded Mi'kmaq land.
Indeed. And I am in Denver, Colorado, which is Arapaho, Cheyenne, Ute, and Mountain Ute land. So... here we are in all our complexity, trying to talk to you about the complexity of how banks and the banking system actually works. So here's what we're not going to do, friends. We're not going to do a play-by-play of what happened to Silicon Valley Bank. There are plenty of genius explainers out there. We can link to some. You can certainly find some. You probably can't avoid having heard some over the last week and a half or so. Instead, today, we want to talk to you a little bit about how banking systems work in each of our countries. We want to talk about some of the interconnections, some of the messaging you might be getting and why, and then what where we think this is going to go from a like next couple of years perspective.
Exactly. So if you kind of joined and were like, oh my God, thank God the Ladies Who Crunch are going to give me the anti-capitalist explanation of what the hell has been happening for the last week and why it's the only thing people are talking about, we're actually going, just look in our show notes and you'll find that link to an explanation of why Silicon Valley collapsed and kind of a summary of the key stuff that's been going on. We just feel like, to be honest, there's been so many good people who have done really good summaries. So we're gonna lesbian process what just happened. We're going that's beyond
right.
it.
That's right. And I want to start with the classic lesbian processing question, what you're getting wrong about this issue. And what I think you have wrong about it. Look, because we're getting things wrong because we're being fed a story about how banking and the economy functions. And the story that we're all fed is meant to reinforce like safety and security and the idea that if we all believe the story that our money is safe in banks, then we all act as if it's safe and therefore the money is safe, right? So one thing that we're getting...
So what you're saying is that essentially the problem with our lesbian relationship with banking is gaslighting.
Is gaslighting? Yeah, and is, you know... It's gaslighting and it's, you know... like in most relationships, we don't really assess the risks. We don't really even understand the risks until those red flags are waving, right?
And oh, so, no, we're totally pleasure focused. We're like we're like the universe will take care of us. Mm-hmm. I mean,
which might be the universe
hashtag fractional reserve system. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. in a way, you know, if you go watch the videos we're going to link and, you know, if you didn't know the term fractional reserve system before this week, then it is the word du jour of the bank collapse. But in essence, the concept that a bank is like a piggy bank and you go and put your money there and someone guards it and it just stays there is not true. Really what happens is... when you put your money in the bank, they keep only a small portion and they lend the rest out. And so in a strange way, you know, your money turns into more money. And people keep using the phrase like the banks create money. In reality, they're not actually creating any physical money. They don't print money. What they're really doing is just sharing your money. So you put in 10,000 actual dollars and then they lend a portion out to somebody else and then they lend a portion out to somebody else. And on everyone's accounts, it looks like they have all that money, but really, you know, that $100,000 that's circulating that all those people think they have is fundamentally only 10,000 real dollars. And this kind of, this is the fiction that, you know, there no bank hides the fact that they do this. The fractional reserve system is known everywhere. It is governed. The government sets the rules for it. It is absolutely legal. It is what occurs. And it, you know, but does the is the average person fully aware that all the money that they've saved in their life that they have in the bank is not actually available to them? It's kind of this funny little open secret. And
yet we all have this like kind of sense, like, you know, when you're dating that bad boy, you know, that like something maybe could go wrong, right? Should this whole issue really be like lesbian metaphors? Maybe. But anyway,
I mean, it's what I've got. I mean, yeah. It's really like, it's my lens on the world. But in essence, like runs on the bank, which is what happened to SVB. Like in essence, people, it's almost like there's a bad thing happening. Bad thing. There's like a kind of risky thing happening and everyone's chill about it. Until the exact moment when absolutely everyone is not fucking chill at all. It's like everyone is fine with the it's like driving a car. You know, we're all so laissez-faire and kind of like chill about the fact that we're all driving around really dangerous death machines. And then something strange happens, like someone pops out of a corner and you don't see them. And you feel this insane panic and you feel like a life-threatening kind of panic. And it kind of makes you have this moment where you're like, oh my God, like I almost just got killed here. You know what I mean? To me, that's like the run on the bank. It's like everyone suddenly is like, oh my God, my money isn't there. Like there's only a fraction of the money actually there. I need to try and get my portion of the money out ASAP. And then they go and it's like this, you know, essentially everyone can't freak out at the same time or the sort of like open secret that is the linchpin of the entire system gets pulled out and suddenly everything starts to collapse.
Right. And here is the like, here's the thing that I think people get wrong. So yeah, there's like, there's our selective disbelief, right? Our kind of magical thinking that like everything will always be fine because we're getting that messaging and the whole system is safe because we're getting that messaging. And certainly more governance and rules have been put in place to make it safer, at least in the US. But I think that one of the things that we're getting wrong is that somehow you can avoid the risky parts of the system. So I had somebody write me this week to say, well, I'm thinking about opening a bank account for X purpose, but I really want to make sure I can avoid Silicon Valley Bank or any banks connected to it. But the reality is that the banks are all connected because all of their customers are like one bank will lend out money to another customer of a different bank who then is paying a loan to a different bank who is then paying a loan to a different bank. And that's being lent across business. So like business loans are happening. That's being lent across consumer loans, but that's also being lent like bank to bank. Like all of the institutions are connected. And so I think, you know, there's this idea that, oh, if I just avoid this one person I can avoid, or this one bank I can avoid the risk. But it's like, you know, to extend our metaphor, no, you can't just like avoid one particular lesbo and then think there's no lesbian drama that'll ever come into my life. No,
it's like every relationship has, there's no, it's like if you're gonna fuck around with love, you gotta take the risk that shit's gonna fall apart. And this is the thing about banking fundamentally,
yeah. Yes.
is if your question is, oh, Silicon Valley Bank collapsing has made me feel worry about Silicon Valley Bank. I want to put my money in a bank that is not connected with Silicon Valley Bank because I don't want what happened at Silicon Valley Bank to happen to me. And that is a little – the problem there is that it's the wrong – it is the wrong strategy, or it is the wrong question. Like the risk was not Silicon Valley Bank.
That's right.
The risk is just banks were told they're 100% safe, but they are not. Are they extremely risky? I mean, then you're asking me to measure risk, and it's like asking me how red is this red? Do you know what I mean? Like it's a weird question, but every single bank in the world, well, not in the world, I shouldn't say, every single bank in the United States and Canada, in the two countries that we're in, uses the fractional reserve system. Like there is no bank that operates completely exempt from the risk that Silicon Valley Bank fell prey to. It is the system that exists. Did Silicon Valley Bank navigate that system in a potentially, you know, extra risky way? Did they make bad decisions? Did they ride the waves poorly and drown because of it? Yes. Do other banks not do it?
Make extra bad decisions. Like this is, I think this is the thing that we feel like, oh, well, if we can just research banks enough to understand which decisions were bad, we can find a bank that will never be risky. No, there's inherent risk in capitalism. I think that's the, like their decisions were, they were not out of scope. They were not illegal. They were not decisions another bank might not make. I think that's the thing to take away.
Yeah. Oh, they weren't illegal decisions.
Yeah.
They just, you know what? It's a card game and they played by the rules, but they played a bad hand.
That's what it is. They played by the rules and the hand ended up being bad. I think this is like the takeaway for all of us, right? It's the risk is inherent in the system. It is, in fact, has a name. The name is systematic risk. Like this is what we're looking at in our financial system. And we give these risk models names so that we can abstract them away because, of course, like white capitalist culture wants to abstract away our feelings. Our feeling is fear and the fear that risk brings up, right? And yeah. So we're like, oh, it's just systematic risk. We can, you know, abstract it away. And what we're seeing a lot of people do is move their money to big banks now. So it's like Bank of America and Chase and like other huge banks are getting influxes of cash because people think that those banks are less risky, but they're all doing the same thing, part of the same system. A bigger bank is more well capitalized, but the
ironic thing is that it's those mass movements of money that actually make the system start to get very rickety. And the problem is not like if Silicon Valley just collapsed, like, you know, Bed Bath and Beyond is collapsing in Canada. It's like pulling out all its business in Canada. This is a big whatever story about this. And this happens all the time, you know.
Sorry about your candles.
Yeah, like I'm, you know what? I've already cried those tears. I'm done with all of the grieving over Bed Bath and Beyond in Canada. but if Bed Bath and Beyond goes bankrupt, you're like, oh, shitty for them. And then you move on with life. But the problem with banks essentially going bankrupt, a bank collapsing, because financial systems, like Hadassah just described, banks interconnect with banks, and those banks interconnect with banks in other countries because of this whole globalization vibe we've been on since the late 90s. Like, it causes a domino effect. And it's not Silicon Valley collapsing that made the government freak out. It was the fact that Silicon Valley collapsing starting to create a domino effect of panic and money movement and withdrawals that could potentially collapse the entire system and then also start bringing down businesses. And, you know, because if banks collapse and if businesses lose deposits, like way more than the 250 they had in there, then now you have businesses going bankrupt. Now you have layoffs. Now you have people having no income coming in.
Right.
It takes a situation from bad to worse. And you right. know, a situation is not just bad. It is absolutely catastrophic. Like the potential, like it, Silicon Valley collapsing was not the bad thing. What Silicon Valley Bank collapsing could have led to, that was the catastrophic thing that makes yeah. Congress get together on a Zoom at like 2 a.m. on a Saturday. Like the American government right now is so divisive and so like slow to do anything because everything's an argument. They got on a fucking Zoom at 2 o'clock in the morning on a weekend and right. did
Well, what actually,
that's how bad and scary it was.
And here's what it is. It's like, so you have Silicon Bank, the FDIC takes over on a Friday. Then you have Signature Bank that collapses on a Sunday in the US. And then right after Signature Bank, that's when the FDIC comes in and says, we're going to actually cover all the deposits because they saw the writing on the wall. Again, it wasn't just this one. It's the interconnectedness of many. Then over the course of the last week in the US, we have what's it called? First Republic Bank, also being propped up by other banks, getting loans. So it's not going to fail as of today because it's getting loans. And then you have, you could talk more about this, but now we have banks outside of the US. So Credit Suisse, right, in Germany.
Almost failed.
Almost failed. Got a giant loan from the National Bank of Germany, right? And then you have like SVB Bank in Canada is closing. Because of globalization, now we're starting to see multiple bank effects. And the thing that stood out to me this week was that by the end of the week, American banks had borrowed $165 billion from the U.S. federal government. And so it's not necessarily taxpayer money, but it is the federal government printing money in the form of bonds to loan out to banks, right? So it's nothing like the $2 trillion that was printed 2 years ago, but it is still, if we're trying to fight inflation and get inflation down, printing a bunch of money is like the opposite of what you want to do when you're trying to reduce inflation, because the more money that is in the system, the more money that's available to spend, right?
And,
so,
and this was kind of where I was hoping this conversation would go, because a run on the bank is truly, truly like, you know, it's so funny. Like the nightmares of government are like the most boring things to the average person, like inflation and runs on banks. And like people are like, I don't get it. What's so scary? And it's like, but it is truly the kind of, it is the, you know, the genesis pieces that they, the thing itself, no, it's not like a gory death situation, but they know that it leads to somewhere extremely, extremely bad where real people will really hurt in a long-term kind of thing. Like these people are like Games of Thrones-ing it. Like they're looking at the ages, you know what I mean? And for me, the collapse of Silicon Valley and then the government reacting how they did and then watching the political play, watching the spin, watching the articles, the podcasts, what people are saying on TV, it is about, like, they're obviously trying to work the narrative to try to hold shit together. Mm-hmm. And it kind of swings back into this thing that's been happening to me for a long time now. Maybe my whole life, but it feels extra in the years of the pandemic, which is in the years of the pandemic and in these years that this kind of like deconstruction of news and this sort of like crumbling, you know, the notion of fake news kind of making reality feel less real is, you know, trying to see what's really happening through everything that people are saying. Mm-hmm. And then kind of realizing that it's everything that people are saying that is trying to construct the real. Mm-hmm. And they realize that it's what they say. They have to get us back into the mindset of feeling chill enough to stop like acting like lemmings right. and going in the way that they, that the government needs us to go, that the banks need us to go in order to hold together this very complex system. And I feel like, you know, it's like, I think that I've been hearing that the economy is in a state of recovery ever since the vaccine rolled out. Like, as soon as the vaccine started to roll out, people started talking about how the economy was recovering. And, you know, but this recovery to me suspiciously feels like things getting steadily worse.
It's interesting. Yeah. It's like recovery for who and on what, like in what elements are recovering, because I wouldn't say the environment's recovering. I wouldn't say that like we can have been able to acknowledge that there's huge gaps in the workforce because many people died, and therefore there's lots of job openings because there are not the humans to fill those jobs. Because we had a like mass death event, right? Like it and all of these other things around.
Oh, no, but that's not why the job problem is, because millennials and Zoomers don't want to work. Oh, it's not because all these people died.
It's soft lifing. No, it's
yeah, it's avocado toast. Like, I love how people, no one wants to talk about the mass death event. Nobody right. wants to talk about it.
Right. But I mean, your point that we're messaging is trying to have a messaging. I mean, we saw it happening very clearly, very quickly, like over the last weekend. The American economy is safe. Everything is fine because the global economy is so connected to the American economy. But then it's interesting, Laura, to hear you talk about how the messaging is also connected to this bigger messaging of everything's getting better. It's going to be okay. Get back out there, get back to work and shoppity shop, at least in our Western countries. Like that's
and how. Keep your money in the bank.
And keep your money in the bank, you know. And if you don't keep your money in the bank, here are the things that will happen because of inflation. Like it's very rigged, right? And it's more and more of an open, secret. And it's like the word that comes to mind for me is simulacra. Like it's a simulation of a safe society is the message.
That's when you know someone has a master's degree is when simulacra comes out.
Oh no, I got that in undergrad in Toronto, homie.
It's true. That is a very Toronto.
It's semiotics. It was a very useful degree. I just used part of it right now. I mean,
it was good. I loved it. It gave me a tingle.
Here's the thing we didn't talk about, but I think it's been on my mind, which is like from an anti-capitalist / anarchist perspective, is it maybe good for there to be a massive bank failure? I have been really struggling with this question because I struggle with celebrating anything that will bring mass human pain. Like I just don't feel excited about. Like there was maybe an early 20s version of me who actually didn't really understand the scale of human pain that would come if there was a massive bank failure and people didn't have money and couldn't buy food and like bread lines. Like I'm generationally removed from that experience, even if I'm not generationally removed from poverty, right? But I think the part of me that is not generationally removed from poverty is able to say it's in fact terrible to not be able to meet your needs. Like it is very bad, or to only be able to depend on external sources to meet your needs, right? Like the government and like food and things like that. So there's like the one hand, I feel very resistant to leaning into that. And on the other hand, we've been talking for the last 20 minutes about a system that is fundamentally flawed, that we have to all just like enter the matrix to agree is going to be fine. You know, that is like only self-perpetuating, creating more wealth, which on the one hand means the masses of people can feed themselves. That's a good thing. On the other hand, you have people born billionaires you have this de facto, very imbalanced, unfair system that might only, you know, begin to function if there's like a major crisis event such that banks have to be privatized, or there's not actually banks the way we think about them or something. Like from an anti-capitalist perspective, I don't have a solution, but even just the question of like, do I want this to happen is something that's more complex than I might've thought it was at a different time in my life. I'm curious your thoughts.
I mean, I guess my thoughts now in thinking about the, do I, as an anti-capitalist, am I like rooting for the, you know, am I sitting here like visualizing industrial collapse and being right. like, yes.
Right, right,
and,
right.
you know, like that's like my vision board that's right here off screen. You know what I mean? But like, I think that I also struggle with that because I think that people, when they talk about, there's kind of this way in which sometimes in radical or anti-capitalist, whatever circles, talk about if we all could just like wake up from this dream.
Right. Right.
And see that it was all garbage. We could liberate ourselves. And then we are automatically in the better place where things are going to be better. I think that is like cutting out a huge chunk of the narrative, which is, you know, if in order to get to the place that y'all are talking about, what is the in between? Like, what is the change management mm-hmm. there? And a massive collapse and fueled by panic, anything fueled by panic, sounds like a terrifying way for it to go. And I do struggle with that because the thing is, if the system is so huge and so well entrenched and so powerful, how can it ever be displaced except through a very violent, a very like painful and catastrophic, a very like something of immense disruptive force? And how can you create something with that much disruptive force that does not destroy the most vulnerable in its wake? Do you know what I mean? Like in yeah. your mind where you're like, when it collapses, it's just going to be rich people's heads in guillotines. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I think that it's going to start with a lot of people at the very bottom, maybe starving to death.
Right, right. And so I'm like, that sounds like, well, I don't want to sign us up for that. Like, that seems like
I don't want to sign us up for that either.
You know, and so then I'm like, okay, well, am I exercising my futurist imagination by saying, well, what's the alternative? But I don't want to like kind of
yeah, slide. Am I too much into apocalypse? Is my futurist mind too focused on apocalypse and is right. not focused enough on like examples of like, is the That's only possible. Force yeah. that has enough momentum to displace the current system necessarily a destructive force?
Right.
Do That's I only possible. Think that because the only like narrative or imaginative examples I have are all like violent examples?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like what are the other alternatives that aren't like a slide into liberalism where it's like, oh, we can just like continue to preserve the like current system with like new policies.
Reforms.
Like, yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't know about that. But I also, yeah, don't want to be like, well, the only way through is mass death. Like, again, that's not,
it's not helpful. And
that's not
you know
okay.
what, in the wake of these disasters, like in the sense of like bringing it back to the like, what am I seeing happening now? And little inklings where I'm like, ooh, what's going to happen in the near future?
Yeah, let's
is
talk
like
about that. Yeah.
in the wake of disasters like these, where like a bad thing happens, like 2008 collapse and everyone loses their house, and this like a collapse of a major bank, is you start to have these stories, and they're kind of a bit like fluffy news stories where the headlines are things like, all these politicians saying that they're going to fix banking regulation the same way that they said they were going to fix the mortgage system, the same way that they said they were going to fix like all these things.
Right.
And they're a part of me is like, they're saying this to get the public to stop panicking. And everyone looks at it and says, oh, okay, they're going to, the thing that caused the problem, they're going to fix it. But people's attention doesn't stay on that because, to be honest, banking regulation reform, if you were like really paying attention to it on the long term, is boring AF. And people, right. It's not going to be at the front of the news pages for the duration of however long it takes for it to get through. And, you know, once the watchful eyes of the public kind of like move off of it, does it end up happening? Do they make changes, but those changes actually aren't enough at all? Or do they make the changes and then those changes get recalled once it's politically safe to do so? And this also comes to this thing where I'm like, I don't feel like it's not in the best interest of the powerful to educate the world in a way that is actually useful, such that, you know, it isn't helpful to politicians that people get a good financial education, that they get a good education about civics or government or politics to understand right. those things. It doesn't help right. them. So that, you know, because like, for example, if you Google Trump reaction SVB, Trump is out there saying that the reason that SVB collapsed is because of Biden's raising taxes.
Fascinating.
That's what he's saying has caused the SVB collapse.
Oh my God. Meanwhile, their administration like raised taxes on the middle class and cut them on the wealthy and businesses. Anyway.
Meanwhile, his administration actually reduced banking regulation in 2018. Ron DeSantis is going out there blaming diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives for the SVB collapse, saying that SVB's attempts to like be woke diverted their leadership's attention from their core mission, which then led to their collapse. Like, people are out there saying insane shit as to why, like, they're like, and because people don't actually either care about or know about, they weren't, you know, taught in school, like, and I'm talking like basic public school, how things like banking and stuff work, which actually should be something that people fundamentally know when they graduate high school, no, in my opinion.
Trigonometry, Laura, come on.
I mean, it's this, it means that someone going out there and giving that spin, that's something that somebody can hold on to. How is that spin going to work its way and change what's going to happen next politically? And I think about inflation. Like,
that's right.
Inflation is actually really has very, very bad, like really bad real world impacts, and people are feeling them. Like, in Canada, the cost of groceries is absolutely insane right now, and people are really hurting. The interest rates around the world are going up. In Canada, they've been going up. Canada's inflation rate and US are really close to each other. They're in the same ballpark. And the inflation rate at you know, the peak of the crisis was up near 10-12%, which was disastrous. And, you know, your country and my country have both been raising the interest rates, and the raise of the interest rates, they have been pulling the inflation rate down. And now it's around 6%. It hasn't been as effective in some of the most important ways, because the two things, at least in Canada, that are still driving inflation the most are food and shelter. And the cost of food and shelter are still things that are rising, that still have the highest individual inflation rates, which is really scary. But basically, in overall inflation rate, it is going down. And the only way for the federal banks, the only way for the government to continue to get inflation rates to go down, because 6% is lower than it was, but it's still not good, is that they have to not just hold the inflation, the interest rate steady, they have to keep increasing it. They're going to have to keep increasing it in order, you know, their goal is to try and get the inflation rate down to 3% by the end of 2023 in the hopes that sometime in 2024, it gets back down to that 2% comfort zone.
Right. And it's interesting to me because we're always looking like the numbers are often like lagging. So we're looking like when we say 3% or 6%, we mean annualized. So it's a yes. lot harder to get the numbers kind of in real time. And then the other thing about inflation is that like there's a lot of things in there, but like one solution to the pain people experience of inflation is to give people more money. So if inflation is 6%, then raises need to be 6%. Pension and Social Security increases need to be 6%. And then your money will buy the stuff it used to buy. But we see people resistant to that approach.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And the thing is, because this process that like inflation's going to hit the cost of buying things before it's going to hit your salary. Is the message, and that delay causes pain because because the gap is not going to be that your pay went up really quick and shit's really cheap, so you buy, like, do you know what I mean? It's the other way around. And I guess when I think about inflation and I think about Silicon Valley Bank collapse and I think about looking at what people are saying in the media, because really, this whole story is about confidence. It's about managing panic. It's about what people think, and so how we see
managing risk.
Exactly. Right? It's seeing, watching what people are saying in order to manage, kind of like the general concept of what reality is. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get people into a reality where they calm the fuck down, and I can see a narrative where it is now going to become even more difficult for the feds to keep – there's going to be such political pressure on the feds to not raise interest rates. There was already huge pressure on them to not raise interest rates because it's bad for business, all this stuff. It's going to be painful. But there's going to be even more pressure for them not to raise the interest rates because – if you have listened to any of the videos or things that we link or just generally listen to the news, one of the reasons that SVB collapsed is because they had invested in these, you know, bonds when the interest rate was lower. So they were kind of like low interest bonds. And then as inflation drove things higher, these bonds became devalued. And it caused a problem when they started to have a liquidity problem and they had to sell the bonds. They had to sell them for a loss. And now they started to have a cash flow problem. And so this little chunk is going to be like raising the interest rate is going to cause our banks to collapse. And if they start to connect raising the interest rates to bank collapses and make people panic about that, it's going to be really hard for the Fed in your country, in my country, to keep on the path of trying to curb inflation.
I mean, the only thing that I'm thinking here is like, is interest rates the only, like, why is raising interest rates the only tool that they have? I don't think we should discuss that, but I think, are there other tools to deal with the cost of living crisis, right? And like the interest, like we focus so deeply on like, the only way to do this is to raise interest rates, but that's like it's so far upstream on so many of these issues. Like, are there other upstream things that could be tried? And so
I think there are, but yeah. I'm just saying that it's going to throw, like, this is what they're doing.
Right.
Like, they're not doing the other things that they possibly could do. Like, this is their solution.
Might this force them to do some of the other things? That's a question I think for another podcast, because Laura and I are going to wrap you
that's
up.
That's true. Wrap you up.
Thank you, friends. Thank you, Patreon subscribers. Thank you, listeners. More to come.
If you enjoyed this,
yeah,
we can try and do more of these really no polish, just putting it out there, because right now this is our capacity.
all right. Thank you, Laura. Thank you.
Thank you, Hadassah. It's so good to see you. I love you. I love you. Catch you later.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.